This is KHSU.
KHSU.
Grown in the Andean Mountains of South America. It's a flowering plant in the amaranth family that's a cousin to the beet, the chard, and the spinach. Both plants and seeds are edible, though most people have probably only seen it as a small cooked grain, often served in a salad. Some people look at it and wonder what it is, as it has a short tail on each of the grains, known as a cotyledon. Sometimes people think it looks a little funny. There's both red and white varieties, and it's marketed as a superfood because of its high nutritional value. It has complete protein with many amino acids. Some have called it the new kale, referring to its growing American popularity. In 2013, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization named 2013 the International Year of Quinoa. So what interests me in bringing quinoa to Thursday Night Talk? It's really that it's being grown quite successfully in Humboldt County, and this production represents some of the largest domestic production anywhere. So for tonight, I have two guests. Tim Schultz is the Vice President of Development with Lundberg Family Farms.
Good evening, Yana.
Thanks for coming all the way from the Valley, I believe, to be here. That's great. And Blake Richards, a local farmer and a pioneer for local quinoa production.
Howdy.
All right. So this is a call-in show. I'll let the listeners know when we'll be opening up the lines. I just mostly want to welcome you, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me on the show and for sharing your experiences. Can each of you give me a bit more introduction about what you do and how you got interested in quinoa? Blake, why don't you start?
Well, we started messing around with quinoa just in a small way a number of years ago, and we saw that it did really well. And so we started doing more and more along the lines of being able to grow it to sell to the local stores. And we started doing that. And we originally started growing it in a certain way that was similar to the way they grow it in South America, which is plants spaced far apart. And we were dry farming it, not watering at all. And that's the way we still grow it. But over time, we saw that the closer we spaced it, the better it did for us. And so we got closer and closer spacing with our plants over time. and then we, that helps out for lots of reasons. But then we also needed to figure out a way to process it and to make it edible. Because when you harvest it, it's got saponins on the seed, on the outer part of the seed coat. And those need to be taken off to make it edible. And so that was, we had a big learning curve with that.
So were you interested in quinoa because of it? Something you like to eat, or you thought about the market potential, or what brought you to quinoa?
Yeah, both. It just seemed like we knew that there was very little being grown in the United States, and we thought that it would do well, and we knew that there was a lot of market potential. So yeah, all those reasons.
All right, great. Tim, how about you and Lundberg Farms? How did you find quinoa?
Well, we've been in the rice business since 1937. We grow 17 different varieties of rice and have been processing and selling that as a value-added product since the late 1960s. One of the things that we'd seen recently was that our market, shelf space was shrinking, and so we wanted to go out and see, well, what are we losing shelf space to, and one of those things was quinoa. We said, well, let's figure out what we can do about that. So we were under the assumption that it could only be grown in South America, so we went and we made some connections with some farmers down there. We brought it to some of our retailers, and they said, well, we already have South American quinoa, so we're not really interested in having a Lundberg South American quinoa, so why don't you try something different? And then we heard about some efforts that were going on in growing quinoa domestically. We got connected with Blake, and so we started talking with Blake and working something out. And so in 2014, I had the first production crop grown of quinoa for us here in Humboldt. And we took that to market, and it was very successful. And then this 2015, we expanded. And then this last year, we had almost 600 acres of quinoa grown here in Humboldt. It was very successful. We generated over 1 million pounds of quinoa right here in Humboldt.
1 million pounds, wow. So where in Humboldt is the crop being grown?
All over. So we have, we grew some in Shively, we grow in Lolita, we grow in Blue Lake, in Corbell, in McKinleyville, Hydesville, so all over.
And most of, is there a distance from coast? Is there a temperature limitation?
Quinoa is very sensitive to temperature. So you don't want it to exceed 90 degrees, approximately 90 degrees when it's flowering, which rules out some areas. But Humboldt is very well situated for that. The other thing that it's sensitive to is moisture at the wrong time. So you can get a good crop going, and then if you get a good rain right before you're ready to harvest, you've lost your crop because it sprouts on the plant.
It sprouts. It doesn't mold.
It sprouts.
Wow. So what does the crop look like? How could you recognize it if you drove by a field of cultivated quinoa?
That's a great question. I think early on in the season, it's kind of a bushy plant and stays fairly low to the ground for about the first 6 to 8 weeks while it's building its root structure. After that, it kind of springs up, and I think that you could say that it's, amaranth is something it would look similar to.
Lamb's quarter.
Lamb's quarter, definitely, early in the season. As the season progresses, it changes and it evolves, and I would say the best time to see it around here is July and August. It's just brilliant in its colors. You'll see these fields of gold, of blazing red, and oranges, and it's just a beautiful crop in the July-August window right before you're ready to harvest it.
Wow. Why does the plant make all those colors? Anyone know?
Well, the different varieties. So we are growing a few different varieties. So one of them is called Cherry Vanilla, and that one was named Cherry Vanilla because it has this brilliant red leaf that goes with it, and it looks almost like the field's on fire in the August, September, or July-August time frame. There are other varieties. There's another variety that has a more of an orange or a golden hue, and so each variety has different expressions in the leaves.
The white varieties we grow, one is Cherry Vanilla, were developed by a guy up in Oregon called Frank Morton. He's a seed breeder up near Philomath, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And he's done more quinoa breeding than anybody in the country. And the white varieties are the ones that he's developed.
And so are we growing just white?
So we have two products in the market right now through Lundberg Family Farms, and they're available nationally. So one is something we call an antique white, and we use the Cherry Vanilla variety in that. And so it's a little higher fiber and higher protein content than some of the white varieties that are coming out of South America. And then we have another one we call tricolor, but that's probably a misnomer because there are at least four, maybe six colors in the tricolor. It's a blend of a lot of different seeds that Blake's worked hard to develop.
Yeah, we call it rainbow also. It's just a mix of all shades of grays, all shades of browns, all shades of whites, and a little bit of reddish color in there. And that was originally, the seed we got from that, the seed we started with was originally from White Mountain Farm in Colorado. And they've been growing quinoa in this country for several decades, Ernie and Paul New in Colorado. They still grow a couple hundred acres of it there, but they mainly sell direct to customers through the internet.
And, Blake, do you grow other crops besides quinoa?
A little bit, yep. We grow some vegetables.
Okay, great. So earlier, I think, Blake, you mentioned that quinoa's that you do is dry farmed. Is all quinoa dry farmed, or how would you describe some of the cultivation strategies?
Most of what's being grown around here is definitely being dry farmed, though people have been experimenting a little bit with irrigation when it's younger, especially where the soils tend to dry out quicker. So with dry farming, as you know, it means no irrigation, but it means more than that. It means, maintaining moisture in the soil, which means keeping a loose soil on top, right. Keeping the top of the soil cultivated and loose as opposed to let it crust or get solid.
And does that prevent the moisture from
evaporating? Yeah, that's like a mulch. It's a mulch layer, basically, and you keep the moisture in that way.
So that means you have to go through and cultivate on top of the planted crop, right, and protect the crop?
A lot of most of the quinoa being grown so far in this area, we are growing in rows, mm-hmm. and that allows us to cultivate, to keep that, to not only to control weeds, mm-hmm. but to keep that mulch layer on top. But we've also been planting in as they grow wheat in just 6-inch rows, and then you don't cultivate. And then if you don't get rains, then it's kind of like your dry farming because you maintain that mulch layer on top just because the soil doesn't crust down. But if it rains, then you lose that benefit.
And is there a particular soil type that quinoa does best on?
It's working in all soil types really well, from really sandy soils to really heavy clays, as long as there's enough moisture. And some of the benefits of the sandy soils, of course, is even because they'll tend to dry out quicker, and that can be good. Even if the yields aren't quite as good, it'll hurry maturity, because that is the biggest problem, the biggest risk with quinoa. The reason it's not completely ideal around here is that there is a chance of late August and early September rains, which could ruin the crop. One quick day of rain is not going to be that big a deal because it's like a heavy dew. Mm-hmm. But if you get a couple days of rain before you harvest, it could be a problem. But if it's ready enough to get ruined by a rain, then theoretically it's ready enough to harvest. But, of course, it's hard to go harvest all of it at once like that.
And can you grow it in the Ferndale or Arcata bottoms, too?
Yeah, that's where it's doing really, really good, are all the coastal areas here. Yeah, you get bigger yields we're getting along the coast, actually.
So the fog, that August...
It likes those cool temperatures a lot.
Does well with, we call it foggist around here sometimes. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk. I'm host Jana Valakovic. We're talking about quinoa, a newly developed crop for Humboldt. My guests are Blake Richards, who's a local farmer, and Tim Schultz from Lundberg Family Farms. We welcome your calls at 826-4805 or at 1-800-640-5911. And you can use our new text feature, which is 492-KHSU. So what about the milling and the processing side of quinoa?
After we bring the quinoa in from the field, first thing that we do is we clean it. So we take out foreign materials, it may be straw, it may be other weed seeds or other things like that, and then we dry it. So we want to have a stable moisture content for it to be stored. Right before we're ready to package, then we remove the saponins, and so that would be equivalent to milling for rice. So you're removing the outer layer, and it's somewhere between 5% and 10% of the weight of the seed, and you remove that. That's the bitter layer, and then you are ready to package it and deliver it to consumers.
So, do you air dry it? Do you put heat on it to dry it?
Most of the drying that we've been doing has been air dry. Mm-hmm. We've applied some heat. It really depends on what moisture content that is coming in from the field.
Do you put it on a rack, or how do you air dry a vat of little tiny seeds?
Well, this last year we experimented with a screw dryer. So we would put a dryer down with a tube down into a super sack and circulate air in the super sack and dry it right there. That was one method. We have conventional dryers. We have pothole dryers. We have a lot of different styles of dryers that we've attempted. We're still pretty new with this, so we're still learning what works best.
And are you drying here in Humboldt, or are you moving the wet product out?
Yes, we're drying in Humboldt, and we're also drying over in Richvale, where we're based.
Okay. So that saponin is, a natural protective product of the plant to probably inhibit herbivory, or what? Do you know what that product is for?
Well, we've exactly that probably. It's so that birds don't eat the seed. I guess that's why it developed. Eat it before it was ready, I guess, or something. But we've experimented with a variety of quinoa that had no saponins, and we did see that the birds started to eat it. But
yeah, last year we trialed a new variety from France that has been developed that doesn't have the saponin. We thought, well, this is great. Mm-hmm. This is one less processing step. But where we tried that, the birds ate that, and then right across the way, the birds didn't touch the quinoa that had the saponin on it.
Hmm. Can you do anything with that saponin once you've harvested it off the or cleaned it off the quinoa seed?
Some people are using it for a soap. We are doing some research right now to see if it can be used potentially for a pesticide or an herbicide, and so we are applying for some grants to do some research on that.
All right. Great. Well, we've got our first call. I think we have Mel from Pepperwood. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk. See, I don't... Michael, is he there? Okay, well, we'll just keep going forward, and if... Mel, are you there? All right. So you're experimenting with some other uses of that kind of waste product, or alter, you know, a piece that comes off of the in the cleaning process.
Yeah. So just having been in the rice business for a long time, we find uses for all parts of the rice, and so our goal is to find uses for all parts of the quinoa plant.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I mean, what can you speculate about how it might function as an herbicide or a pesticide? Or is that more just kind of hopeful ambition?
I think some folks have reported that it's been helpful as an herbicide. I don't know if you've had any experience with that, Blake.
As an herbicide, I don't think so. We've experimented with it that way, and it doesn't seem to. But as a pesticide, I can see it having some potential there. But we haven't experimented with that.
Yeah, right. But that certainly opens up the other side of the market, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm watching the signals there. You probably have noticed that. So you've been drying it here, and then you're taking it for packaging somewhere else?
Yeah, so our operations are based in Richvale, California, which is a little south of Chico.
Uh-huh.
And so we take it over there for storage. And then as we get orders, then we mill it and pack it.
And are you giving it a specific marketing of domestic quinoa or Humboldt quinoa? What does that look like?
Yeah, so we are calling out that it's domestic quinoa. On the tricolor that we're marketing, we have a little tag on it that shows that it's a product of Humboldt County.
All right.
So we have found that a lot of people are pretty excited about that beyond Humboldt County,
yeah.
Being able to see something that is a domestic product.
Have you connected with our Humboldt Maine folks?
We haven't yet.
All right. There's a bit of a marketing effort to try and brand the Humboldt image, but all right. I think we've got a call. We've got Jeremy from Bayside. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Very much.
All right. Are you there, Jeremy?
I am.
All right.
And thank you for your guests and all. My two questions. First is, I have about an acre that I could cultivate quinoa on, and whether or not that is worth it. Also, if I have enough quinoa, how would I market it?
Well, the yields with quinoa have been in, you know, the average yield last year with all the Humboldt County acreage was about 2,300 pounds an acre. But, you know, that stretches from 500 pounds to up over 4,000 pounds. So that'd be the kind of yield you'd be looking at. As far as marketing, you know, that would be a little bit tricky because, one, you would need the equipment to process it, which means get the saponins off. And that we bought a machine from Peru to do that. And then we still needed to also have a rice polisher in conjunction with that. So it's kind of a project. And so just having an acre's worth, I don't know if it'd be worth it. But also, as far as locally, there's, you know, it's kind of already taken up, who's selling to the stores around here. And then, as far as selling to Tim at Lumberg, that possibly could be an option. He'll talk to you about that.
So, Jeremy, thanks for the question. I think one of the things that I think about is critical mass. So if you have an acre, what kind of equipment are you set up with? And so when you ask the question, is it worth it, it depends on if you're having to get special equipment just for this. An acre probably wouldn't be sufficient to pay for that. But if you already have all the equipment, then it very well may be.
And so what would be some examples of the equipment that an individual might need?
So you're wanting to prepare your soil, so you're going to want a tractor, you're going to want discs, you're going to want some sort of a seeder, then you're going to want some cultivation equipment, and then when you go to harvest, I suppose you could harvest by hand, but that would be a awfully labor-intensive process. Most of our farmers are using combines for to harvest their crop.
Okay, I do have the cultivation taken care of. I got a small tractor, and plows and what have you. It's a three-point hitch. So now I know locally there are individuals who come around and will gather your hay. Is that the type of thing that is there? Would that be something that would be available?
Yeah, there's a couple friends of mine are actually have set themselves up to do custom harvesting of quinoa in this area, Scott and Andrew Wilson, and so they do that, I guess you can.
I guess at this point, yeah. Why don't we send people to my office, and then I can field people and get you connected. So the Cooperative Extension Office is at the Agriculture Center in South Eureka. It's in partnership with the County of Humboldt, and our number is 445-7351, 445-7351. And I guess after this show, if we've piqued your curiosity enough, I'll be happy to help field calls to the respective folks.
Well, you'll certainly hear from me, because I am interested. Like I said, I got this acre that I would love to do something with, and I think quinoa is the next big thing.
All right. Thanks for your call, Jeremy.
Thank you very much. Thanks to your guests.
Yeah. Yes. I believe we have another call from Mel from Pepperwood.
Hello.
Hi, Mel. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hey, thanks. I'm outside, so I can't to get away from the radio, so I haven't been able to listen to the show, but I actually... You know, I grew up in Iowa on a very diversified farm where we grew crops, fed them to livestock, sold the products of the livestock. Now all my relatives grow corn and beans and beans and corn and corn and beans and beans and corn. And all their productivity is based on how many bushels of those they grow per acre. And with quinoa, I have no idea. How do you measure the production per acre? Is it by bushels or pounds or something else? And what's normal for an acre of what I call prime ag land in Humboldt County, like I have, which is bottom land in the river bottom?
Well, you can measure it either way, in bushels or in pounds per acre. A bushel of quinoa weighs about 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. And the average yield in Humboldt County last year over that 500 acres was about 2,300 pounds per acre.
Wow.
But it ranged anywhere from about 500 to a little over 4,000,
mm-hmm.
Depending on, you know, lots of variables.
And would part of the variable be how far you are from the coast and how hot it is?
Well, of course, it can't get too hot because then, you know, you won't get any quinoa at all. It won't set seed. And
right.
So there's a fine line there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the moisture is pretty much the main. And, you know, not having weeds and having your ground prepared right and fertilized right and limed right.
Mm-hmm.
But also moisture. That seems to be the biggest. Everything else being equal, moisture is the yield. And really affects yield. But also planting date. We find that...
And what's your typical planting date?
Well, because we do find that planting too early, you get a smaller yield. And planting too late, you'll get a smaller yield. And plus, if you plant late, you'll risk the rains wrecking it more likely.
And do you do your planting based on soil temperature or daylight hours?
Yeah, I mean, the last couple years, the ideal planting date has been in late April. As far as the biggest yield.
Okay.
But that can be a little hard with soil moisture, depending on your fields, to get into. We planted a lot of fields even into June this last year,
mm-hmm.
Which was really late. And we definitely saw a yield decrease because of that.
Okay.
But planting in early April, I think, is okay, too. But much before that, and yield goes downhill again.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Mel.
Okay.
I believe we have another caller, Hannah from Blue Lake.
Yep.
Welcome, Hannah, to Thursday Night Talk.
Hey, am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Okay. I just had a question. So I am a young farmer. I've been working on produce farms in Humboldt for about 5 years now. And obviously the question of, you know, how can I start my own farm here in Humboldt comes to mind. So I just wanted to bug you guys and ask, you know, get a piece of advice of where to look, or if you suggest leasing land first, or, you know, looking to buy. I don't know.
I think you should definitely just rent a little piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to find one pretty easy and just do a very small thing. And just rent just a little bit of equipment to start with, or have someone can prepare
start
a little bit of ground.
Small.
And I would just pick one particular crop. Find one thing just to focus on.
Is this Blake talking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Find okay. one thing to sell and get your market set up ahead of time, whether it be
okay,
a store
cool.
or a couple of restaurants or something. And then you can experiment with little things on the side, but I would just pick
yeah.
one thing just to grow and focus on.
Yeah. I need the affirmation, so I just wanted to ask.
Yes. Thanks, Hannah.
All right.
We appreciate your call, and I guess I'm going to switch a little bit into my day job role. So I run the Cooperative Extension Office, and we have lots of programs to help beginning farmers get started, lots of educational programs, help with business planning, and work through technical questions. So you're welcome to give us a call at 445-7351, and you probably want to speak with Deborah Giroux, and we'll get you started. All right. I think we've hit a topic that has some interest. I haven't had a show in a while with this many callers, but we're thrilled. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk. I'm host Jana Valakovic, and we're talking about quinoa, which is a kind of a new niche crop for Humboldt. We're speaking with Blake Richards, who's a local farmer, and Tim Schultz from the Lundberg Family Farm, mostly known for their rice production, but they've ventured into quinoa, which is exciting. We welcome your calls at 826-4805, 1-800-640 5911, or you're welcome to text us at 492 KHSU. Michael, can you give me the name of there? All right, we've got Pepper Joe from Fortuna. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hey, Jana.
Oh, yeah,
Blake,
welcome.
And Tim. Hey, you guys, this is so cool. You know, I ran into this, I think, in Territorial Seeds, I don't know, it was 15, 16 years ago or a few. And, you know, I just was growing it. Not so much as a cover crop, but just as a something that just looked beautiful in the catalog. And it turned out to be just one of the best row crops to do a rotation. And, you know, 22% protein, you can't beat that. But when you feed it to your chickens, they kind of turn their noses up at it. And it's that coating that's on the outside. But down here in Fortuna, Fortuna area, Alton, I grew a big crop one year, and I tore a greenhouse down, and I had plastic down underneath. And it was during the evening that we tore this greenhouse down, and we pulled the plastic up, and we planted that night and then covered it with some potting soil. And there was hardly any weeds. It was, I think, 13 by 66 feet, and it was the most incredible crop I've ever grown. All the different colors, the chartreuse green was the best. I love that. But this crop is, it is just bulletproof. And our friends, the Mennonites, down here in Alton, Hydesville area, have been gracious. Pete and Marcus, they have been gracious with giving us some seeds. There was a little too much weeds in the outer rows, and let us have as much as we wanted. But I'm not sure, Blake or Tim, you might have actually been buying some from them, or they might have contracted with you. But I tell you what, this is a crop. This is a wonderful crop to grow. And I guess you already know that.
So do you have a question for us?
Well, my question is, you know, if you can grow it from April, May, and June, you know, if you grew three crops, you know, you're talking about a full-time job there. And, you know, I think that's, it, as far as, you know, as for a grain crop for our local bakeries and stuff, we probably couldn't grow enough here. But there's a potential for food. You know, you can sprout this stuff. If you did have a failed crop because of an early rain, which, you know, we may be coming out of a drought, you never know, but you get a failed crop because of an early rain, that all that becomes food for because that's when the animals, the chickens or birds or what have you, they love that stuff. And what I've done is I sprouted it for them and then put it out on trays. These are just for Japanese jungle fowl chickens, and they love it.
Okay, so if I can translate, what I'm hearing you ask is, you know, what's the potential for two crops a season, and then does it work for an animal feed product? So Is that correct? Is that your question?
That's correct, Yana.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pepper.
All right. Yeah, it's just barely pushing it to get one crop because, you know, often with the wet springs, it's hard to get in and plant on time. And then that stuff just barely makes it out before the rains start to harvest. And as if it just barely sprouted, I mean, I don't know how you'd harvest the animal food on a big scale. You know, if you were going to use a failed crop, I think if it were to sprout in the field, it's pretty much a loss as far as you just have to put it back into the ground.
Well, you could possibly get a local rancher with a baling machine and just bale the whole thing up into bales and then sell it accordingly. You know, just say you got to feed this out really fast. I think any animal would eat it. It's with that amount of protein, it's even with a little bitter taste, there is a value in that.
Okay.
Well, they've done studies with feeding chickens quinoa, and it's without getting the saponins out, and it's made them not even lay eggs. And so it's maybe if it all sprouted, you know, and didn't sprout so much that it just degenerated, then maybe it could be animal food. But
and then maybe it could turn it into a silage or something like that. You know, Pepper, we do have another call on the line, so I want to thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Blake, Tim, Donna, awesome show.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. I believe we have Leah on the line from, or Lila from Eureka, sorry. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you for taking my call. My name is Layla Roberts, and I was thrilled to encounter that the show was happening just purely by accident. I'm the director of the North Coast Small Business Development Center, and as a person, I love quinoa. I think it's delicious. I love that we can grow it here. And so I have a question for Chuck and Blake, and then also a comment. And my question is, I would love to hear you issue a call to action, I guess, for Humboldt farmers and value-added producers. What are you hoping that we can all step up to do to take advantage of this wonderful plant and product? Do you want more folks under cultivating it? Do you want more value-added products? Do you want whatever it could be? And the comment I wanted to offer is that we, thinking of someone who had called in most recently, we love the Ag Extension Program. We love that the Farmers Guild is coming to Eureka in mid-February of 2017. To provide an intensive two-day training for new and small farmers. We are going to, as the Small Business Development Center, be wrapping around a multi-week, multi-month cohort learning program for farmers who want to sort of really take a deep dive in what it takes to be both a small farmer and a small business person. And quinoa seems like a wonderful way to get people to really get excited about this opportunity. So please get creative. Risk. Issue a call to action. This is wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for your call and for that question. That's a great question. I would say that my call to action is to eat more quinoa. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is to make the American consumer aware that this product even exists. Most American consumers don't know that it exists and is a possibility. The most recent data is that about 100 million pounds of quinoa were imported into the United States, and I think that was in 2014 is the most recent data that was available. So this year we grew in total about 1.5 million pounds. So if you think about that in proportion, that's a really tiny fraction of the market. So we are trying to encourage American consumers to be aware of this product and to hear the great stories. We work with some amazing farmers. Blake is just an incredible guy to know. He's an amazing farmer. There are a lot of other farmers in Humboldt that we love working with, and we would love to work with more of them. And our biggest challenge is balancing supply and demand. So we don't want a lot of farmers growing this until there are American consumers ready to buy it. And so we're just trying to balance that and bring them up roughly the same pace so that we can have a great product that's out there for the consumers and a great crop for the farmers to be growing.
That sounds sensible, and thank you very much.
Great. Well, I appreciate your call, and I think we'll think more about what that is in terms of that call to action and how to integrate this new niche crop, where some of the limiting factors are, what some of the pieces that need to be overcome. I know we'll probably get to some of those pieces in a minute in our conversation, but we have another call. Mike from Petrolio, welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Thank you. I got a question because out here in Petrolio, we're a little bit distant. But I've got fields, 5 acre, 20 acre, you know, different size fields that could be done. I have the equipment, you know, that you've suggested. But your last statement was you're really not interested in increasing production. Is that right?
Well, I am very interested in increasing production. I'm also interested in doing it synchronized with increasing demand. And so we've just had the product out on the market for about a year and a half. The first year we had limited supply, so we tried not to distribute it too widely. So now we are building that distribution and that demand. We are talking with everyone who is interested in listening about this great crop and helping them to understand that it's available, that it's a healthy product, and that is grown here domestically by some incredible farmers. And so that's what we're working on, and we'd be happy to talk with you, and you can get to us through Yana. I could refer you on to us, and we'd be happy to talk with you about the 2017 crop. We're just beginning to market the 2016 crop, and we want to see how that's going, and want to make sure that we don't have 2 or 3 years worth of quinoa sitting in the bins and just trying to balance that out.
Would you be interested in any kind of situation where I grew a crop and you cleaned it and I got it back and I just paid for service?
I think we're interested in looking at all areas. I think somebody else, the previous caller, asked about value-added products. We're just getting ready to launch a new value-added chip product that has red rice and quinoa in it, and that will be hitting store shelves this next month. So we're looking for all sorts of ways to utilize the product. We're looking for the byproduct, ways that we can potentially utilize that. So I think we're open to listening to all ideas. We think it's a great product. We think it's a great crop. We'd love to see farmers benefiting from it. And I think choice is a good thing. And for farmers to have additional choices in the crops that they grow is a great thing, and we're hoping that we can promote that.
But I'm not sure you answered my question about whether or not if I grew some that you would be able to put it through your cleaning facilities.
We'd be happy to talk with you and figure out if we can make that make sense for you.
And so the thing would be that I would have to get basically combined drums of quinoa to where?
So we're based in Richville. We're about 20 miles south of Chico.
So, Mike, why don't you give me a call after the show, and we can talk through this in a bit more detail. But I think this is kind of our next step, is thinking about as a community where what's the right timing, what's the right acres. I would imagine that Petrolia fits in terms of that distance from coast and moisture piece.
As long as you don't get too close to honeydew.
Right, yeah. Right.
No. Right. You can see the ocean from all my fields.
Yeah.
But also with the Grange Pancake Breakfast, where we use locally grown wheat, it'd be kind of nice to be able to throw in some locally grown quinoa as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, yeah, thanks for your call. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Thursday Night Talk. I'm host Yana Valakovic, and we're talking about quinoa. My guests are Blake Richards, who's a local farmer, and Tim Schultz from the Lundberg Family Farms. So we were talking quite a bit about markets and market potentials. You're talking about developing a new chip product. It's no longer potato chips, corn chips. It's a whole new realm. So can you talk a little bit more about what the domestic market looks like and where we might run into Lundberg Humboldt-grown quinoa?
Sure. So right now you can find it at the local co-ops. So our product, you'll find the packaged product on the shelves there. You'll find it if you go out beyond Humboldt into Whole Foods markets. You'll find it at a number of different grocery stores. And we're talking with also some big box stores who have expressed some interest in it. Right now, the price of South American quinoa has really plummeted over the course of the last year or so. And so whereas I would say 18 months ago you could find quinoa in the bulk bins selling for as much as $16 a pound, today a lot of those places it's selling for $3 or $4 a pound. And so that is not driven based on our bringing 1 million pounds into a 100 million pound market. It's really driven based on overproduction in South America and the demand not keeping up with their growth of supply.
I see. I guess I haven't noticed as a consumer. I will admit I do like quinoa, and for tonight I did have quinoa to start the show off. Thought it'd be fitting. Thank you, my family, for making that happen. Ways to encounter quinoa are just as the grain itself, right? Is there more and more of a processed?
So you'll see a lot more processed quinoa. So you'll see quinoa in cereals. You'll see quinoa in breads. You'll see quinoa in snack products. You'll see there are bars now that used to have, let's say, puffed rice, and now they'll have puffed quinoa in them. So protein bars or cereal-type bars. So you're seeing quinoa in a lot of different forms, and folks are looking at additional ways to present it to consumers for lots of different ways to consume it.
And is that for the protein side of quinoa? Is that the attraction to putting it in those different products? Or
I think the protein is one of them. I think also that it has all 9 essential amino acids, so that's another way. One of the other things is just the texture. So a puffed quinoa crisp has a nice crunchy texture. So I think of like a crunch bar that has kind of the puffed rice in it with the chocolate. Well, now there's a chocolate bar out there with quinoa crisps in it, and it gives you a similar kind of texture.
Okay, great. So you mentioned a little bit about the Andean market declining. That's based on overproduction, is what your understanding of that situation is?
Yes, I think these things tend to go in cycles, and we've seen a number of cycles. I've been studying the data that's out there over about 20 years. I haven't been studying it, but I've been studying 20 years of data on it, and you can see pretty predictable cycles. So there'll be a spike in the price, and then everybody wants to grow it, and then the price will crater. Nobody wants to grow it, which will drive then back up the price because now there's not enough supply. So it goes in pretty predictable cycles. One of the things that we're talking with retailers about is we think we can help them avoid those peaks and valleys. And so our discussion with them is trying to get to a more consistent and reliable price, and also a quality product where we can tell them this came from this field. We can trace it all the way back to the field and back to the farmer that grew it.
All right, so that we call that the chain of custody, right?
Yes.
Yes. So in the Andes, is it grown at a high elevation, and that's the temperature control piece?
Yeah.
Is that? Yes.
Yeah, that's traditionally people thought, oh, it had to be grown at high elevation, but it's a temperature thing.
Right.
It's cooler at the higher elevations there.
And grown in the high, like, perched valleys, or do you have a sense of what?
Well, very high elevation, so the temperature stays cool in the highlands of Bolivia.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it must be cultivated by hand in South America? Or is it, when they've scaled up for production, have they matched it with similar kind of equipment changes and strategies? Do you know?
I'm not as familiar with their production methodologies.
Yeah, no, I didn't expect you to know it all, but always interesting to think about. Well, let's talk a little bit about we've talked about some of the mechanical investments that are required, or the equipment investments that are required. How about other inputs? I assume your market is organic.
Yes, our market is organic.
And so what are some of the other kind of potential financial investments that someone would have to put into, say, an acre of cultivated quinoa?
All your equipment overhead, of course. So you're going to have all the equipment you have. And so if you had, you know, 50 acres, you're going to be, it's going to be a better economy to scale than just 1 acre with equipment, because you're going to need the same equipment. And then, of course, you need to fertilize. You need to lime, and you need to be able to cultivate and harvest, and so you need equipment for all that.
Right. But I guess what I'm trying to get is sort of the dollar cost investment of on a you know, some kind of unit versus the rate of return. How does that pan out?
So you're definitely going to need to invest in fertility. And one of the drivers of the variation in yields that we saw this year was the fertility going into it. And so some folks put no additional fertility. It had just been in grass hay or something for some period of time before. They didn't put any supplemental fertility, and they had pretty low yields. So I think that's one of your investments, and I don't know what, depends on what you're coming out of, but you may be investing anywhere from what, $100 to $300 an acre in fertility?
A lot more than that, probably, yeah. I mean, we put on anywhere between 1 and 4 tons of chicken manure per acre, and buying it, you know, in big semi-loads, it's, about $200 a ton, or, $100 a ton. So in chicken manure alone, you're talking almost $400 sometimes, or at least a few hundred dollars. And then lime, you know, $100 an acre there too. And then, of course, the time and effort to put it on. And then, of course, the cost of seed. We're using all our own seed, but still, we could have sold that seed, and so that's another $50-$60 worth right there. And then the rent, land rent.
Right.
And then the fuel.
And then I think one of the other things is cover crops, and that also is going to be building back your fertility and your soil tilth. But a lot of our folks now have are in beans for the winter.
Mm-hmm. What kind of beans?
Mainly bell beans we use for our cover crop, because they're more competitive with the big mustards that are such a prevalent weed around here in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. And are you having weed competition challenges?
Some of the ground we have is very weedy. We inherited some very weedy ground that we farm, but some of it is not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons we grow in rows in the weedy ground, so we can cultivate out a lot of the weeds.
Right.
And that's one reason we've planted more and more densely over time, is because when you plant really dense and you have a weed here and there in the row, it's not as significant competitively, you know, because it stays small and stringy, just like it doesn't get as big and significant.
Right. And you, Blake, we were talking before the show, and you were saying there were some other reasons you liked to grow more dense in terms of forcing a harvest maturity date. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, we found that the denser it's planted, the quicker it matures, for sure. Traditionally in Bolivia, they plant far apart. And you get big, branched, beautiful plants with those giant heads of quinoa that we all know from photos. But we now plant, you know, 10 seeds an inch in our row. Crazy thick. And you don't get those big, beautiful heads as much. You get lots of little, tiny heads. But it matures 2-3 weeks earlier. It pushes the maturity, and we find that yield stays consistent. And that's what a lot of studies have found,
right,
that yield, regardless of the density, that yield's consistent. But if you plant it dense, though, you don't have to, if you do have a weed here and there in the row, it's not as significant.
Okay.
If you plant them, if you wanted to have plants far apart, then you're going to have to take care of all the weeds in between them, or it's not going to be like they are far apart.
Right. So in terms of why Humboldt, I'm assuming we can't go farther north up the Oregon coast because they get more late summer rain. Is that kind of a controlling factor? And we can't go too far south because we run into warmer temperatures? Is that why Humboldt is kind of in that, you know, that right niche? Or
I think Humboldt and Mendocino are both pretty ideally situated, both from a temperature and a precipitation profile. There are other parts. We've mapped out the entire United States and have identified areas that kind of fit that profile. But I think that this has, Humboldt and Mendocino probably have the most number of acres that kind of fit that ideal profile.
Yeah, and once you go down further south than Mendocino, all along the coast of California, it'd be great because it stays cool all along the coast. But land just gets too expensive down there, the land rents, for quinoa to be competitive to grow. Yeah, and once you get up into Oregon, the chance of late August rains are definitely get more and more as you go up the coast.
I see. Great. Well, I believe we've got another call. We've got Naomi from Arcata. Welcome to Thursday Night Talk.
Hi, thank you. I grew just a small bed of quinoa, and I didn't know how much water to give it or anything. I was just, it's just experimental to see what I could produce. And the things that happened was, number one, it kept falling over. And I'm wondering if there's any way to keep it from falling over. And the other thing, of course, I was just growing with horse manure. And it seemed to get really good full heads, but the seeds were, I think, if I was judging by the size of the seed that I've seen in the stores, that the seeds that I was able to produce were only about half the size. And I'm going, oh my gosh, that's almost, you know, not worth the trouble of, you know, doing whatever I would have to do to process it to make it edible. But so, is horse manure a reasonable fertilizer? How do you keep it from falling over? And I guess those are my main questions.
Well, any kind of manure is a great fertilizer, as long as you use enough of it. And horse manure you need to use quite a bit of.
Uh-huh.
And the small seed, that's probably a variety thing.
Uh-huh.
And also, you tend to get small seed when it's real dry. And when it grows without much moisture. But if your plants were falling over, it sounds like they grew pretty good.
Yeah, they were about waist high on me. I'm 5'3", so.
Yeah, so that's not too tall. But I'm surprised they were falling over at that height.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds like you've got an opportunity for some more experimentation.
Sounds like that could be the case, all right.
I mean, does the crop do well with the wind?
It depends on when the wind's coming.
Yeah.
So a couple of years ago, one of our farmers planted, and then there was a really strong wind, and it dried out the soil, and it really set back his crop quite a bit. He grew in that same field this year and got a substantially larger yield off of that field. And so coming right around planting, that's not a good time for a big, strong wind.
Right.
Quinoa is a pretty sturdy stalk, and it will withstand a fair amount. It will lodge, but I haven't seen nearly the lodging in quinoa that I've seen in rice. So,
well, thanks for your call, Naomi.
Okay, thank you.
I think the wind's a good thing for it. It makes the plant stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, wind as it starts maturing is great. Kind of helps it dry out. And when you're getting ready to combine, it's what you want. So, you know, because you can't combine when there's a lot of moisture on the plants.
And so that's why I keep wondering about that fog period that we can get in August. So you must be trying to harvest right in the middle of the day, then, in the driest part of the day. Right, great. Well, we're getting close to the end of our show here. I just want to start to wrap up a little bit. Michael, do we have any more calls? Nope, okay, great. So we've talked about a few of the challenges, a bit of the finances, a bit of some of the market opportunities. You know, what else is there to say as we kind of wrap up on the potential for quinoa for Humboldt, its current market value, or how would you like to close this out?
Well, quinoa is an amazing food, and it has so much potential. And the fact that Humboldt is the center of the universe for American production of quinoa, I just find amazing. It's very exciting. I love to come over here, and I love to meet with all of the farmers that we're working with. They're doing a great job. They're excited about the crop, and they really have their heart and soul into this. And I'd like to share that passion with our consumers all around the country. I was in Baltimore this last fall at a trade show and presenting the quinoa, and the consumers and the retailers that were coming by our booth just love the product, and I love being able to share that story, and I loved being able to bring it back here to Humboldt and share this amazing crop with the people in this community. I'm just so excited about the opportunity.
That's great. Excellent. How about you, Blake? Do you have any?
Not.
Well, we do have a few more minutes here on our show. I guess, you know, if you're to look in your crystal ball, where do you see this domestic market going?
I anticipate that it will continue to grow, that you will find that I think one of the rate limiting factors for quinoa consumption has been that it's all been imported. And so as we have more available here domestically and we're able to grow it, I think you'll see more demand, and then the supply can keep up with that. I think you'll see it both in like table quinoa, so you see a package of quinoa that you just make at home. You'll see it in value-added products like our rice chips, like in cereal bars and other snack products and other foods. You'll see it in frozen foods as a base of a dish. So I think that there are a lot of opportunities, and I think that, you know, I hate to say that it's unlimited. Everything has limits, but I think there is a lot of upside for domestic quinoa.
Mm-hmm. I guess as we close, thinking about the consumer of quinoa, you know, you get the package. It says if you're going to cook it yourself, you need to rinse it. And, I mean, one of the great qualities about it is it cooks really fast in about 15 minutes or so. So how important is that rinsing process? And any insights on that kind of piece of preparation for a consumer?
So rinsing is important. It takes off. In our process, we remove most of the saponin. We aren't able to get 100% of it off with our process. So that rinsing gets the last little bit, and if you don't rinse, you'll notice a bit of a bitter taste, and so it helps remove that. So that is an important factor, both from a taste standpoint, and I don't think you really want to be consuming a lot of saponin. I don't know about you, but when I was young, if I was in trouble with my mother, sometimes I would get my mouth washed with soap, and so... that was never a positive kind of feeling, and you know, saponin is a soap, and you don't want to have that. So it's not a pleasant thing, and you want to get that bitterness removed.
Okay, great. Well, anything more, Blake?
Well, one thing I was going to say is that they are working on developing a varieties of quinoa that will grow and set seed where it gets hot. Washington State University is working on that pretty actively. And so if that ever happens, you know, it probably won't make sense to grow quinoa here because it'll probably become something that it's grown in the grain-growing regions of the country on their huge scale that they're used to.
Right.
So that's something that could shut it all down here.
Right. So the market could change, definitely. But the opportunity for a niche market and a new crop is, I think, quite exciting. So I think the crop value this last year was somewhere a little over $1 million. Is that about what you're estimating?
Yeah, I think the farm gate value was, I think, probably in Humboldt was probably closer to $2 million this last year.
All right, I checked the CDFA, the California Department of Food and Agriculture website today, and not everything is in yet. So the reported value is about $1 million thus far, but I was figuring it was a little higher than that because not everybody has reported. But that's in terms of, you know, where Humboldt County sits, that is definitely greater than the overall vegetable crop production in Humboldt County. So, you know, here it is on 640 acres and producing, you know, a significant value and a great return for our local farmers. So I think, you know, that's part of what my motivation was with bringing this topic to the KHSU airwaves and, you know, sharing a little bit about, I think, some new market development and some new opportunities for local producers. And so I thought that would be worth the time. Well, as I wrap up here, I want to thank you for listening to Thursday Night Talk and thank Blake Richards and thank Tim Schultz from Lumberg Farms. And I'd like to thank our numerous callers. We had Jeremy, Blake, Hannah, Pepper Joe, Lila, Mike, and Naomi. And I'd like to thank you all for listening and wish you a good evening.
You have been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thanks to our host, Jana Valakovic, and our guests, Tim Schultz and Blake Richards, and our many callers this evening. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email thursdaynighttalk@khsu.org. Like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. And coming up next week on Thursday Night Talk, as the Dakota Access Pipeline conflict continues to heat up in the cold of pending winter, Eric Kirk discusses the issues of petroleum, water safety, indigenous rights and sovereignty, and the very right to protest. Eric's guests include Conrad Fisher of Klamath Riverkeeper, who has just returned from Standing Rock. Tune in and call in December 8th, beginning at 7. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. No Room for Squares coming up next. It's 8 o'clock.